Welcome BPIF members for joining us today. I'm Mandy Robson and I head up the operational support teams within the BPIF. And I'll be taking you through today's podcast headed, How Do We Prepare for the End of the Coronavirus Job Retention Scheme? If we take ourselves back to last year, as we were hitting the peak in coronavirus and our first lockdown, government introduced the Job Retention Scheme to support businesses and their existence during the pandemic, which was advising employees to work from home or utilising the furlough scheme. In March this year, government extended this scheme to support businesses up until the end of September 2021. And of course, this date is now fast approaching us. Many of our BPIF members are just not ready for this and are asking lots of questions. How do I prepare for this? What are my options? I'm joined today by BPIF's HR advisors who are experts in this field, and we'll take you through some of these options for you and the step-by-step guidance to ensure you adapt to these changes sufficiently. I'd also encourage you to talk through your plans with your local BPIF HR advisor to ensure you're following a robust process throughout. So on to our first question, which may seem to be quite a simple one, but it's a difficult one which many members are currently faced with. How do I get my staff back to work? So I'm going to seek advice from our HR experts, Yolandi Gibbs and Rachel Beasley. Hi both, from your experience, how can businesses support staff in this area?
Hi Mandy. Yolandi and I are going to talk about some of the issues with recalling employees from furlough now that the job retention scheme is coming to an end. A question that some of our members have is in situations where they have some employees still furloughed. The members spoken to them and some of the employees don't seem keen to come back. One of them has refused to come back to work. So what should we do if an employee doesn't want to come back to work from furlough?
Okay, so refusing to work is a fundamental breach of terms of conditions. And under normal circumstances, the answer could be no. However, the current climate may create situations where refusal to return to work could be justified. This would be especially true where there is a general risk to health in the workplace and for specific individuals where they might be particularly increased risk to their health.
So, if after I've discussed the matter, it seems like there might be valid reasons causing a reluctance or a refusal for an employee to return to work from furlough.
What you can do is consider if there are alternative options. Can the role be carried out at home, either permanently or through hybrid working? Can additional COVID secure measures be put in place to protect individuals whose roles cannot be carried out from home? Or you can conduct a COVID-19 risk assessment in order to identify any potential risks.
Okay, that sounds fine. But if after I've discussed the matter with an employee and there aren't any valid reasons which might prevent them returning to work from furlough, what then?
It may be possible to pursue disciplinary action. In doing so, it would be important to follow a fair disciplinary process, adopting a consistent approach for all absent employees, while still taking into account any individual factors that might mitigate the seriousness of any refusal to return.
So, how do I go about recalling an employee to work?
Well, what you can do is ensure that you confirm the return to work from furlough in a letter. Speak to your regional advisor in order to obtain a suitable template. You could also ensure that the employee is provided with the opportunity to raise any concerns that they might have about returning to work. You could also ensure that you listen to concerns and properly consider them. But before the return to work date or on the first day back at work, please schedule a return to work meeting.
Okay, that makes sense. So I'll send them a letter. But what if then, if some of the employees tell me they've got concerns, what should I do then?
Well, what you need to do is investigate the reasons for the individual's concerns. They may be reasonable in these circumstances, but please always take notes of conversations so there's a written record.
What sort of things should I look out for? And what sort of concerns can employees have?
Well, there could be concerns about the workplace being COVID secure. So set out to employees what provisions are in place and ensure that the company is following government guidance as a minimum. You could also consider ways in which you could make the workplace more secure for employees who have expressed concerns. The employee could say that they're unfit to return to work, so you would discuss the reasons with the employee about why their health, either physical or mental, is preventing them from returning to work, and whether the health prevents them from fulfilling all or perhaps some of their duties. You could hold a welfare meeting to discuss the above. Again, a template is available from your regional HR advisor. The employee may be extremely clinically vulnerable to coronavirus and was previously advised to shield. The employee may also be vulnerable to coronavirus. The employee may have someone in their household or have caring responsibilities for someone who is extremely clinically vulnerable. The employee may generally be scared of coronavirus, or the employee just does not wish to return to work.
So what if an employee says they don't think the workplace is safe for them because they're vulnerable to coronavirus, or someone at home or a relative they care for is vulnerable?
As I've mentioned before, there could be concerns about the workplace being COVID secure. So again, set out to employees what provisions are in place and ensure that the company is following government guidance. You could also consider ways in which you can make the workplace more secure for employees who have expressed concerns.
Okay, that makes sense. What if an employee says they're struggling with childcare? They want to come back to work, but their hours of work just will cause a problem for them now.
Well, you could consider if there are alternative options. Can the role be carried out at home, either permanently or through hybrid working?
What if an employee comes to work using public transport usually, and they say that they're scared of using public transport now?
Again, you can consider if there are alternative options. Again, can the work be carried at home or permanently or through hybrid working?
Okay, that makes sense. What about when employees have been on furlough for a long time and they're worried about coming back to work, but there's no other issue? What can I do to help employees when they come back to work?
Well, if the employees have been on furlough for a long time, employers should be considerate to staff who are returning to work. You should consider employee well-being, including mental health, giving employees time to adjust to being back to work, or offering training or refresher courses.
That's great. What about this situation? What where an employee's been on furlough and I ask them to come back to work, but they tell me that they're sick?
The employee says that they're unfit to return to work, so you should discuss the reasons with the employer about their health. What is preventing them from returning to work, and whether their health prevents them from fulfilling all or perhaps some of their duties.
Okay, that's great. So what if I've discussed everything with the employees? They don't seem to have any concerns at all. And they say that they'll be back in on the date that I've recalled them to work. But on that day, they don't turn up to work. What do I do then?
Having investigated the reasons for any unauthorized absence from work, and where there's no acceptable explanation for the employee refusing to return from furlough, dismissal may be considered an appropriate disciplinary sanction following a fair disciplinary process.
Thanks both. Of course, we'll be living with the COVID virus for some time to come. And your advice creates some really great options moving forward for our members. So on to our second question now. Some staff want to continue with the benefits they've experienced during the pandemic. For example, working from home or flexible working. I will now ask our HR specialist, Ian Dalton, what changes he feels our members can make to support their employees in this situation. Hi Ian, what can members do?
Hi, thanks Mandy. I'd like to take a few minutes to discuss the benefits of hybrid working. But before I start, I would like to say that we already have hybrid working roles embedded into our organisations in the form of sales, regional directors, accountants, to name a few. You may not see these individuals from one week to the next. Work is achieved and there have been relatively few issues. Whilst undoubtedly you may have concerns, and there will be issues with this way of working, there are also issues with employees working in a fixed location. We have had employees work from home throughout lockdown, so you already have an appreciation of the difficulties that it has posed and have worked through these, and therefore the hard work in adapting how we work has already been achieved. Okay. You're now looking at bringing employees that have been flexibly furloughed or fully home working back to an office environment. But this does not mean that everything has to go back to the way it was. And there are some clear advantages to changing to a fully hybrid working model, where roles allow for this or where requested. It has already been mentioned that employees may be reluctant to return to the workplace for a number of reasons, and you'll need to establish whether this is a flexible working request or request to continue hybrid working. If it is a flexible working request, you would follow your procedure as you always have. It is worth noting that some of the reasons that flexible working requests have been declined historically may not be reasons to decline anymore. If you have any doubts, then please contact your HR advisor, who will be happy to discuss these requests with you and in more detail. So what are the benefits? Well, the first thing to mention is there is still facing a global pandemic. Coronavirus has not gone away, and therefore less people you have in the workplace, the lower the risk of transmission. Hybrid working allows you to continue with some, if not all, of the procedures you had in place throughout lockdown and keep your operations moving forwards in a safe way. Also, with the additional uncertainty of what is going to happen over the next few months, I would be cautious about returning everything back to as it was beforehand, in case we find ourselves in another lockdown or even a work from home scenario. We have already established that the vaccine, whilst it helps with the severity of symptoms, it does not stop you from contracting the virus. And we are now looking at the need for a booster jab. This has already started being rolled out to the over 50s and individuals with underlying health conditions. Hybrid working is not something everybody will want, and there will be employees wanting to return to the office as soon as possible and may already have through flexible furlough. But there are obviously obvious benefits to employees if hybrid working is implemented. One, the benefits for the employees who commute to work. These could range from cost saving on commuting to work, a saving time on the commute, and also for those employees that use public transport to get to work, and the risk of catching the virus is significantly reduced if they are using it less, which will ultimately reduce the risk of employees bringing the virus into the workplace. The benefits of home working. Working from home generally means fewer distractions, which helps us do more work, and we are more productive as a result of it. Employee wellbeing. We have also witnessed a rise in absence due to mental health issues, and where being fully remote working may also have an impact on our mental health. Implementing a hybrid working model provides an employer with a better work-life balance, more freedom, but with the added benefit of working from the office part of the time, which alleviates some of the isolation that fully remote working may cause if not managed appropriately. Competitive advantage. Once we have adapted to a hybrid working model and embedded a culture of hybrid working, it will give you competitive advantage, as you have greater access pools of talent when recruiting into new roles. More individuals will be attracted to roles where otherwise could not have applied for. Cost savings. We've already mentioned that employers will benefit from cost saving from commuting, but there are also cost benefits to businesses. There are some obvious savings for businesses in the fact that less people will be in the building, less facilities will be being used, and employees will be home working and using their own facilities. The longer term benefits will be how you set up your workspaces, as you will also require less space and may well find there are cost savings in that too. For an employee, cost savings may be in the form of things like childcare. If an employee has childcare and they only need to start them from 10 minutes before they start work rather than an hour before they start work, there's an obvious benefit to an employee in the cost saving for childcare issues. You may also see a reduction in absence if you consider that an employee who is slightly under the weather, they are more likely to continue to work rather than calling sick. And whilst you do have to have an appreciation that this may happen, you will need to support your employees. It is obviously better from a productivity perspective to have an employee at work rather than not. And finally, there will also be other benefits if implemented fairly then it should benefit all individuals involved, including the business. Thank you.
Thanks, Ian. This is great. And as you say, many members have already introduced hybrid working for staff, and which is working really well. So on to our third question, which extends to various options for businesses, really. And as before, I'd encourage you to discuss these thoroughly with your BPIF advisor to ensure you're following each step sufficiently. So COVID has really changed businesses in the way that they now operate. The question is whether your business has regained a sufficient level of orders and whether there's sufficient work for all staff to operate the same hours they did before the pandemic. Judith Houston and Stacey Bromley are real experts in this field. Hello both. From your experience in discussing the situation with members, what do you feel the alternatives are which members can take on board to review?
Hello, Mandy. Thank you. Yes, indeed. As we know, businesses may from time to time require a reduction in the number of employees, and that is a real possibility now with the removal of financial support that the furlough scheme has provided if production isn't back to that full capacity. It is, however, the company's responsibility to take all reasonable steps to avoid redundancies where possible, and where redundancies are still necessary, at least to keep the numbers to a minimum. A company must ensure it is committed to seeking alternatives if redundancy situations arise, and there is a responsibility for them to seek these alternative options prior to commencing any redundancy procedure. It is also important to ensure the long-term viability and reputation of the business, to maintain a valued and skilled workforce, and to avoid depleting staff morale and productivity. So over the next few minutes, we will be discussing ways a company may consider other options as an alternative to carrying out redundancies. There are a number of options which could be considered, but it is dependent upon the particular circumstances that the company finds itself in as to what is appropriate and what is going to work for them. The first couple are likely to be immediate considerations and are relatively easy to implement quickly, where a company has experienced a downturn in work. So a temporary recruitment freeze, either across the whole company or maybe in just certain departments, particularly where you have an employee who resigns and the post is therefore left vacant.
So could this be absorbed within the department?
Yes, if required. You shouldn't automatically assume you need to advertise and recruit for a departing employee if perhaps you could have the work covered by reorganising internally. You should also consider reducing or stopping the use of any temporary labour, casual staff, agency staff that you may use. Again, it might be limited to departments or across the company.
What about if I don't have the skills there within the business and I need the agency in the temporary cover to do the work specifically for a period of time?
Yes, of course. Obviously, you can continue using this type of labour, whether it's through casual or agency staff. For example, where it's justified if perhaps you don't have the skills within the business.
Okay, thanks.
Another option could be to seek volunteers for redundancy. Don't forget, this is still a dismissal for reason of redundancy and therefore does carry the associated costs. However, it would avoid any compulsory redundancies having to be undertaken and avoiding any potential risk of unfair selection or dismissal claims.
So therefore, by letting the workforce know that VR, voluntary redundancy, is an option, this could be classed as an alternative to compulsory redundancy?
Yes, as I say, it is still a redundancy. So remember, you would have entitlements to redundancy pay that you would have to be able to afford and pay out. But it would mean that you don't have to go through the redundancy process. And we are finding individuals are quite willing to volunteer presently, especially where they have perhaps been on furlough for a considerable length of time and now don't want to return to work. The next one could be redeploying employees to another role, which may be in a different department or possibly even a different location. However, this would require the consent of the individual before any of this action was taken.
But could I just not move an employee to a different role where the work had increased, where it wasn't in the other department? So could I just move that individual across from one job to another?
No, you would need the agreement of an individual if you were going to move them out of their role into an alternative role. And this would be to avoid any potential claims for constructive dismissal or breach of contract. Always consider retraining and upskilling employees so that they are able to carry out other roles within the business, and this allows for more flexibility with your resource. Also remember, cost savings, these can be achieved by reducing overheads, for example, selling off equipment, using less electricity, renegotiating contracts with suppliers. This is an exercise which for most companies is an ongoing project, trying to keep overheads to a minimum and continually reviewing contracts with their suppliers. A further option would be to consider offering employees a period of unpaid leave or a sabbatical. This would not break their employment service with you, that would be protected, but would give the company a salary payment holiday to can help with cash flow and provide an immediate saving. Other alternatives would be to invite and encourage more so requests for flexible working. So this is where an employee may request to amend their working practices on a permanent basis. So again, if perhaps an employee applied for part-time working, again, you'd save on your wage bill. Just remember that this is still a formal request for flexible working and the procedure must be followed, even if it's borne out of the suggestion by the company to do so. Another option could be to consider implementing a pay freeze or possibly across the company or for certain categories of employees. Consider very carefully if it's not going to be applied across the board. It is something that has been applied in our industry over the last few years where members haven't paid increases. And whilst this would secure future cost savings, it would not help to immediately reduce costs. Considering reducing or stopping bonus payments, reducing or stopping overtime payments, or perhaps tweaks to shift premiums, however, would provide more immediate cost savings, but these latter options clearly would require a process to be taken under before any of it was applied, and advice should be sought from your regional advisor before any of that is done.
The company may also need to consider cost savings due to, hopefully, a temporary period in downturn of the work, but on the horizon, it will increase over a period of time. However, rather than going down a redundancy route, a consideration for alternatives may involve temporary changes to terms and conditions or even full-time terms. It is always best to ensure you treat all employees the same rather than just single out individuals or specific departments as much as possible and reducing terms. The company will need to consider whether the relevant alternative measures to redundancy should be implemented on a long or temporary basis. And if temporary, stating when the changes will be reviewed, if possible, and ascertain whether the changes are still necessary and establish what impact these changes will have on the workforce before implementing anything. It could be that the company cannot expect the same output if the number of employees in a department have been reduced, changed, or if there is a change in the way of their working. However, some other more radical options could be to implementing a pay cut for all. This would require the consent of the employees to do this. But a small reduction in pay for many may be a preferred option rather than going down the redundancy route.
Okay, so if they all agreed to say a 10% pay cut rather than the company going down the redundancy route, could I implement that tomorrow?
You would still need to consult and get consent for a pay cut by issuing a letter for them all to sign. However, if they were to consent to a pay cut rather than going down the redundancy route, then yes, you could implement the change sooner rather than later.
Okay, thank you.
Also, implementing a layoff or short-time working arrangement, as discussed previously. However, there should be a contractual clause within the employee's contract to allow the company to operate this. However, if not, you could potentially seek the employee's consent at the time. but you must be mindful there are rules about the length of time that this can be done for. You could also look at implementing or seeking volunteers for a reduction in the working week, or part-time or flexible arrangements with a comparable reduction in pay and benefits. For example, consideration being that you could reduce the working week from 5 days down to 4 if capacity is still only running at 75 or 80%.
Okay, so could this change just be implemented? So, for example, I could tell the employees that as of next week, they will be moving to a 4-day week, as I need to make the savings immediately and can't wait.
No, you would still need to get to consent from the individuals. You would need to follow the process for changing to conditions. If they agree, as previously, you could implement sooner. However, not all may agree to this change, but this will be discussed in more detail in a moment by my colleague. The company should seek to gain agreement from employees if alternatives have been suggested. The company will do so only following the effective completion of a consultation exercise. It is very important to communicate the steps that the company decides to take clearly to all employees. If you do not have the correct clauses in your contracts to make the changes, it will be necessary to obtain employees' written agreement prior to implementing any of the measures. If the solutions offered require employees' agreement and they have failed to give their express consent, or if the company decides that there are no appropriate alternatives to redundancy, the company will then proceed with the redundancy process.
Thanks both. Some great options here, which members may not be thinking of. And of course, there will be alternative option as you described there, the structural changes. As an HR specialist and advisor members in this area, I'll now ask John Cadman what steps members need to take in focusing on structural changes in their operation. Hi, John. I'm sure you have some great advice for members.
Thanks, Mandy. Thanks. Yeah, it's a very difficult area, this, and both restructure and redundancy does cover some tricky areas for members. The main reason, the starting point, is that employees returning to furlough return to 100% of their hours. But we know that some members just haven't got enough work for all employees. And as an aside, do remember the 1st of October is a Friday. You must communicate with members about their return from furlough. What we don't want is employees thinking that it's maybe okay just to turn up on the following Monday. So make sure you communicate properly there. In terms of firstly restructure, the best case scenario is we just get consent with employees. If we can do this, that's fantastic. The main issue here is to consult really, really well. Essentially, it's about winning the hearts and minds of our employees. And as directors and business owners, don't be shy. If you've made sacrifices, if you've made those changes and taken a cut yourself to keep the business going, do not be shy of pointing that out. As previously mentioned, an example of a change might well be a 4-day week. Those employees that have been on furlough might now be used to 80% of pay and actually quite fancy a 4-day week, and it might in fact be quite easy to agree to that. That is the ideal, but unfortunately may not be feasible. The second option of restructure is actually imposing the change. Unfortunately, this is never without risk, but commercially maybe less risky than taking no action at all. Again, thorough consultation and explanation is absolutely vital. Essentially, we're going down a process here of dismissing on old terms. So we dismiss on old terms with an offer of new terms to begin at the end of the notice period. Obviously, we'd encourage employees to sign up to these new terms, and if certain groups of employees or individuals won't sign up, the process means that we should consult further with those employees to encourage them to sign. It may be we'll get a few stragglers that sign up literally at the last minute towards the end of the notice period. But ultimately, if an employee hasn't signed the new terms before the end of the notice period, they would be dismissed from the business. As I say, it's never risk-free, but it might be action that's needed by the business. In terms of justifying fairness, the uniformity of the proposal may be key, or even actually if directors and business owners are harder hit. The fact that there's a genuine emergency need can be important. So sadly, the tougher the task that the business is facing, the more difficult it is. And probably most importantly, we want the vast majority of employees to have signed up. If 90% plus of employees have signed up to the change, there's a reasonable chance that we can argue any subsequent dismissal for those that haven't signed up could be justified. Moving on to redundancy, there's four key areas to cover, we must cover for any redundancy dismissal. An important note here, there is no end of furlough or COVID cop-out. Normal rules apply, same employment law rules apply as in previous redundancies. Firstly, it must be a genuine redundancy. The technical term is less of a requirement for a particular type of work. That should certainly be the case here, sadly, but definitely not performance issues dressed up as redundancy, which can happen. Secondly, we must consult thoroughly, examining all options for avoiding a redundancy dismissal at the end of consultation. Thirdly, we must select fairly by means of a skills matrix, unless a role is genuinely standalone or distinct. And finally, we must consider all options of suitable alternative employment, any vacancies in the business, etc. As ever with such a process, the paper trail is vital. We want decent letters, minutes, etc. That's very important. And of course, anyone dismissed by reason of redundancy must be offered a route of appeal.
So thanks, John. That's great. And thanks to all of you for the superb expert advice, as always. So we hope this has given some insight into the various options as we face the end of the job retention scheme. Please liaise with your HR advisor to work through the options most suitable to you and to ensure you follow a robust process. You can look up your local HR advisor on our website, or please call our central help desk number on 01676 526 051. Until next time, many thanks for listening.